Our guest now is an author, teacher and advocate for Samoa and Pacifica education, who recently, unintentionally, wrote a book. Dahlia Malaulu says she had a lot of time to reflect during lockdown and spent some of it writing articles and poems. We've previously had Dahlia on 9 to Noon as a guest to talk about first three books for young readers, Mila's My Nyanana series. And there are 9 more to come in that series. But in the meantime, her unintentional book, Tēnā Samoa, took shape over just 7 days during lockdown, as Dahlia Malaulu jotted down memories of her own teenage years as a New Zealand-born Samoan girl growing up in Wainuiomata. An e-book was born. Te alofa lava, Dahlia. Lovely to have you back. Welcome.
Te alofa lava, Catherine. Mālo lava le soifua.
Great to have you back. And so you were writing as much as a processing of what was happening, do you think, at this time that we were all kind of adjusting to this crazy new world?
Yeah, I think the lockdown for me personally, we kind of got used to our new normal like everyone else, and we really just embraced the time and space that we ended up having, and we use it as a bit of a reset. And within my own reset was just kind of writing. And so it provided really the best space for me to just get everything out, I suppose. So I got a lot of mini projects completed and created some new ones, yeah.
And some of them professional and some of them personal. We were writing across all genre by the looks of it.
Yeah, definitely, personal and professional. So, and I'm quite blessed that a lot of my personal kind of overlaps into my professional, so I can use it in both worlds in many ways.
When you then wrote this book in just 7 days, did it start as a short story? Did it start as a few memories? How did it happen?
Yeah, it really started reflecting on, as I normally do, reflecting on our tamaiti, our children, issues within the classroom across schools, because I also provide cultural responsive professional development workshops for schools as well. So it was part of the reflection of that, and as a result of an article I actually wrote last year for E Tangata, which really sparked kind of the stories that came to create the actual book. So the article last year touched on many issues that us New Zealand-born Samoan have experienced, like feeling not Samoan enough, or that being Samoan was actually, in fact, not good enough, or developing dual identities to cope, needing to be supported and included and accepted as Samoan. So from that response, I had an overwhelming response from that article, and then it fed into my memories of the conversations I've had with Pacifica students over the many years, over a decade now, and the relationships formed there, as well as through my mentoring and supporting of teachers and staff through schools, and the stories really developed from, or were inspired from, my own and their stories. So it did start as 12 separate short stories, then they were easily connected through these themes that I just mentioned, and then it became the book, yeah.
So who do we meet? Who are the protagonists, if you like, or the characters through whom we experience some of this?
Yep. So there are 4 main characters, 4 junior high school students. The first one is Lani. And Lani is what we call a afakasi, so a half-caste. And she is half Samoan and half Palangi or Pākehā. And she struggles with wanting to know more, or to develop an understanding of her Samoan side, which is really relatable to a lot of New Zealand-born Samoan today. The second character we have is Tuila, who is a proud Samoan girl, but she struggles to be proud out in the world within her school life, feeling like she can't be who she is because her world isn't very representative of who she is and the kind of cultural assets that she has. Then we've got Marcina, who is the church minister's daughter, and she struggles with succeeding as Pasifika, because a lot of home life is kind of emphasised, or the emphasis is on almost like a Palangi or Pākehā way of succeeding. And finally, we've got Vai, who is the quote-unquote real Samoan, because she's come from Samoa. She is the real islander, so she represents that side or that argument that actually happens within our culture. So, yeah, those are our four main characters. And then there's also their parents, because it's important for us to understand the cultural capital and the cultural baggage that our families and our parents actually hold, and the impact that has on our tamaiti, our children. Then there's also the teachers and educators as well. And they have their own impact or input influence onto our children as well. So, yeah.
So this all happened in 7 days. It must almost have been a frenzy. You were in the flow, one imagines.
Yeah. So thankfully I've got an amazing husband, who knows that when I kind of get into a zone, I am definitely there for a while. And it was sporadic. The 7 days wasn't a solid day after day after day. There were moments where we did obviously our family things, and then he also runs a leadership empowerment training business, so he had his time, I also had my own time. So yeah, I was very, very lucky and very blessed to have the time and space. But yeah, it's just by coincidence that it actually happened in that way. And on the seventh day, once I tallied up the amount of days that I actually put into this project, I realised, oh wow, it's a book. So that's where that realisation came from at the end.
Was it an emotional experience? As you said, these were stories. They were either things you experienced in part yourself or others had shared with you in reaction to what you'd written. But when you came to write these characters, was it emotional?
Yes and no. And I think what's helped is I've actually explored my own cultural capital, my own cultural baggage. So I've been on this journey for quite a long time now. So I've been blessed to be able to have that time and space to go through and understand why I am the way I am. And it's really opened my eyes to what I do, why I do it, how I do it, and what I actually want to do and portray, and and what I want to share and support others with as well. So, because when we look at cultural responsiveness, you know, it's an ability to learn from and relate to other people within your own culture as well as from other cultures. And in a teaching context, culture, it's understanding that culture is really central to learning. So it's so important to acknowledge and include our students' cultural references in all areas of our learning. But before we can do that, we actually have to understand our own and understand what we bring to the table and what biases or what values or what perspectives that have actually influenced and molded us. Because that's what we end up passing on or end up battling with along the way. So it's until we kind of look at that's where the best place to start. And I think that's what's helped me. So I wasn't necessarily emotionally attached as I would have been, I think, if I hadn't been through the journey. But it really definitely helped, and it gave me a bit of a non-biased kind of perspective as well, because it kind of took me out of it, and it just broadened the story from Pasifika, Samoan, non-Samoan stories as well. Like, I've got a non-Samoan teacher in there, and it highlights their efforts or the intentions behind wanting to support our tamaiti, but not necessarily knowing how to or developing those connections or relationships strong enough so that the intention and what she's wanting to do actually comes across and connects in the right way or meets needs the right way. So, yeah, so it's been, yeah, it was a really good journey and not necessarily so emotional as if I had not gone through my own, yeah.
Is this in some ways then for the teachers and the educators and the mentors? I know we've discussed this previously, and you made a really important point there. In order to be culturally responsive and to learn what you need to do to, afi would be the Māori word, you know, to really support a student's learning and becoming a young person, you need to know your own starting point, right? And to recognise your own responses and shortcomings. Are you finding that more and more teachers and educators are hungry to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've never come across a teacher who does not want to. I've had questions about why and the importance, and I think it's a real reflection on why they are the way they are. And it's a reflection on how they've been influenced and moulded to be the person that they are. And for example, if you look back, it was only recently, last year, we had the Rugby World Cup and the Tongan flag was shown instead of, oh, it was meant to represent Samoa, but the Tongan flag was shown. Then you had the Otago Daily Times debacle with their cartoon with the jab at the measles epidemic that happened in Samoa. So there's a huge need for us still to be culturally responsive. And I know that teachers definitely want it and they need the support and that they're looking for advisors. And it's a huge need, especially when you're the ministry, for example, a few years back now, who tasked teachers with the role of helping Pasifika to achieve as Pasifika. And as nice and as easy as that sounds, it is really, really difficult. There's so many layers in that one phrase. And the one thing that a lot of Pasifika teachers, families, children are struggling with is how can we have them succeed as Pasifika when a lot of them don't even understand what is Pasifika? And in saying that, how are our educators, who are predominantly not Pasifika, meant to be supporting them in doing that and finding who they are and why they are, alongside trying to get them to achieve as Pasifika. So it's a huge journey, and there's a lot of obstacles and challenges along the way. And our educators are really key in this. Our families are really key in this. Our families and our teachers are our first teachers, our children's first teachers. So they are the ones that we're kind of looking at and depending on to support our tamaiti to understand who they are, to value who they are, to create worlds and safe spaces that value who they are so that our children can know that what they have is actually going to be valued in the world. So it's really, really important, and it's a huge journey that I'm supporting and trying to do my best to create platforms and spaces for that to happen. Yeah.
Explain the title for us, Tēnā Samoa, and what it encapsulates.
Sure. Tēnā Samoa, the literal meaning means Samoan girl. And what it is it's actually a label that carries with it an unspoken duty to obey, serve, and respect your family and Samoan culture. So the reason why it was chosen is because this label has a high emphasis within our culture, as does other labels, but it's a really easy and relatable one that I feel our tamaiti can connect with, same with our families. And it's simple enough as well for non-Samoan or non-Pasifika people to also understand and to grasp, especially through the experiences that these girls go through. So, yeah, so that's the meaning behind the title and where it's come from, yeah.
It's a beautiful cover design as well. How did that come about?
Being a teacher, I'm very much all about voice and choice and student agency, and I take that with me in all the work that I do. So when I was deciding what the cover would be, I literally ran a competition. So I said, we shared with our audience, our Mela's Maunganga series audience, to send in pictures of people who would like to submit any pictures with a certain criteria, and then they sent a handful sent them in, thankfully, and then we chose the cover model from there. So the book cover was literally organized and designed around the selection of the book cover model, which is from the competition.
There are lots of different ways by which you explore this in the book, but there's one reflection, and I think it's a personal one for you. There's one line that strikes me just in preparing for this. Don't you want to be someone? And goodness, that it just pierces the heart, doesn't it? And does it also get to the heart sometimes of where a young person on their journey might be? And is grappling with as they move in dual worlds, and one that perhaps is more supported and endorsed than another.
Yep, absolutely. It is that jolting, some of the realities that our tamaiti and our children actually growing up with, unfortunately. And those conversations happen on two levels, within our actual culture. So there's issues within our actual culture of who is Samoan and who isn't Samoan. And Lani went young, termed it perfectly last year in her New Zealand Book Council lecture when she talked about gatekeepers. So we have gatekeepers within our community, and they are the people who believe they hold all the knowledge and the wisdom, or that they are the real Samoan, and they will be the gatekeepers of allowing or providing the criteria of who is and who isn't Samoan. So you have a lot of New Zealand-born Samoan who struggle with that because they don't necessarily meet this criteria. They are also not necessarily treated, and their experiences are the same as well. And that comes along with what the norm was for our parents and their generation. So their norm was being brought up, being immersed in the language and the culture, and having that real, the language was caught, not taught, you know. So you were brought up in it, that's how it was, that's how you learnt it. Whereas in our environment now, it's definitely not the same, or most cases it is not the same. And you have to deal with how we're going to be raising you this way, with this, with language and culture in Samoa, or are we going to be looking at English as the priority, the way of succeeding in the Pākehā and Whārangi way is the priority, and in between that there's a whole myriad of experiences, but those are just the extremes. So that's one end, that's within our culture, don't you want to be Samoan, and people struggling with that. And then outside of our world, when we're dealing with Pākehā and Whārangi perspectives and systems and beliefs, we are doubling up on the work because we've got our own cultural capital to actually consider on top of this new world that we're learning about, or our children are learning about and have to conform to, because it's just the way the world works outside of our homes. So there's the double work there, and there's don't you want to be Samoan, and why would you when our world doesn't actually reflect it all the time or doesn't necessarily value it? And that's why I feel like our parents and our children are real key factors in enabling and providing and supporting these spaces, or creating them so that our children can actually see themselves in it, see their value and their worth in it, so that they know that what they have is actually worth developing, worth understanding, that it actually even just has worth in this world, because there's struggles in between each of these worlds as well as within them. So, yeah.
Well, this is launched, I think, is it Samoan Language Week this week? This book of yours? And where can people find it, Dahlia?
Yep, so Tana Samoa can be found for instant download on Amazon.com, and we're looking at having it in print form later on, obviously based on all the lockdown restrictions and delays. That's why the choice was made to do an ebook for the first time. So, yeah, that's where you can find it, on Amazon.com.
Great stuff. Whaewhetā te lava. Lovely to have you back. Take care.
Awesome. Whaewhetā te lava. Whaewhetā mole avanoa. E manuia le vai a thonga ngana Samoa.
Dahlia Malauulu, our guest.